don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. All right, guys, welcome to another Cryptoconomy Quick Read. We got a really awesome one today. This is from BitcoinMagazine.com, and it's another one by Aaron Von Wertheim. And this is titled, The History of Lightning, From Brainstorm to Beta. If you haven't done much video or podcast listening or done any reading about the Lightning Network, this is definitely a must read, or a must listen in our case. It's really extensive, despite actually being a pretty short summary of a lot of the different elements. Some of it is passed over pretty quickly. There's only so much you can do in a single article, but Aaron does a wonderful job. So let's go ahead and just jump into it. This is The History of Lightning, From Brainstorm to Beta. As of a couple of weeks ago, the first Lightning implementation, LND, is officially in beta. The second implementation, Eclair, followed last week, while the third, Sea Lightning, is expected to do so soon. As such, the Lightning Network, the long-awaited Bitcoin overlay network for cheap and instant transactions, is by many of its developers considered safe enough to use on Bitcoin's mainnet, a major milestone for the technology that has been years in the making. This is the story so far. The first musings. The earliest origins of the Lightning Network can be traced back as far as Bitcoin itself. The first piece of the Lightning puzzle is a concept called payment channels. Payment channels are essentially Bitcoin balances between two Bitcoin users and only two users. The rest of the world does not need to know or care about their mutual balances. Importantly, these balances can be updated without requiring any on-chain Bitcoin transactions. Where the balance of one user increases, the balance of the other decreases by the same amount. In effect, this allows both participants to transact between each other without burdening the entire network with their transaction data. Once the users are done transacting, they can settle their payment channel by transmitting only one transaction to the network. That transaction pays out to each what they should receive based on their channel balances. To these users' benefit, this should also mean that the channel updates, or off-chain transactions, are cheaper because they don't require mining fees, and are faster because they don't require blockchain confirmations. This general idea is arguably as old as the very first Bitcoin software released by Satoshi Nakamoto in 2009. Bitcoin 0.1 included a raw draft code that would let users update a transaction before it was confirmed. While this code was a rough draft, Satoshi Nakamoto went into more detail about how payment channels could work in private communication with then Bitcoin J developer Mike Hearn. Several years later, in 2013, Hearn published Satoshi Nakamoto's explanation of payment channels on the Bitcoin development mailing list. Quote, an unrecorded open transaction can keep being replaced until in lock time. It may contain payments by multiple parties. Each input owner signs their input. For a new version to be written, each must sign a higher sequence number. C is newer than. By signing, an input owner says, I agree to put my money in if everyone puts their money in and the outputs are this. There are other options in signature hash, such as sig hash single, which means I agree as long as this one output, i.e. mine, is what I want. I don't care what you do with the other outputs. If that's written with a high in sequence number, the party can bow out of the negotiation except for that one stipulation, or sign /none and bow out completely. The parties could create a pre-agreed default option by creating a higher in sequence number transaction using OP check multisig that requires a subset of parties to sign to complete the signature. The parties hold this transaction in reserve and, if need be, pass it around until it has enough signatures. One use of in-lock time is high-frequency trades between a set of parties. They can keep updating a transaction by unanimous agreement. The party giving money would be the first to sign the next version. If one party stops agreeing to changes, then the last state will be recorded at in-lock time. If desired, a default transaction can be prepared after each version, so N-1 parties can push an unresponsive party out. Intermediate transactions do not need to be broadcast. Only the final outcome gets recorded by the network. Just before in-lock time, the parties and a few witness nodes broadcast the highest sequence transaction they saw. End quote. The first payment channels. Although the general concept of payment channels has existed for as long as Bitcoin itself, Satoshi Nakamoto's design was not entirely secure. Most importantly, a user in a payment channel could collude with miners in order to claim more Bitcoin than the channel balance should let him. A solution to this problem was proposed for the first time in the summer of 2011, after Satoshi Nakamoto had left the Bitcoin project. Bitcoin Talk forum user Hashcoin outlined a two-tier payment channel that required users to exchange several partially signed multi-signature transactions and transactions with time locks that depended on one another to be valid. If one participant should disappear, the other could claim all the funds in the payment channel after some time had passed. A downside of this design, however, was that Hashcoin's channels could only work in one direction. Alice could pay Bob an arbitrary number of times, but Bob could not pay Alice through the same channel. An idea similar to Hashcoin's resurfaced in early 2013, and this time it escaped the theoretical realm. In April of that year, a payment channel concept was described by Jeremy Spillman on the Bitcoin development mailing list. He had even coded up a proof of concept. This design was in turn tweaked by Mike Hearn, after which future Bitcoin Core contributor, Blockstream co-founder, and Chaincode Labs developer Matt Corallo turned the concept into working code for Bitcoin J by mid-2013. Another year later, in 2014, Alex Axelrod, now an engineer at Lightning Labs, was the first to propose a bi-directional payment channel. Alice could pay Bob an arbitrary number of times, while using decreasing time locks, Bob could pay Alice within the same channel, albeit a limited number of times. As opposed to one-directional payment channels, however, this solution was never actually implemented in code. The first payment network concepts. Around the same time that the first payment channels were proposed, others, including, for example, Bitcoin Core developers Peter Todd and Gavin Andreessen, were thinking about off-chain payment networks. If Alice could pay Bob through an off-chain transaction, and Bob could pay Carol through an off-chain transaction, then Alice should be able to pay Carol through Bob without requiring any on-chain transactions. Corne Ploy, now a Lightning developer at Dutch Bitcoin Exchange BL3P, had also been working on a payment layer for Bitcoin, which he first proposed as a rough idea in 2011. With suggestions added by Bitcoin Core developer and future Blockstream CTO Gregory Maxwell and Ripple inventor Ryan Fugger, among others, this idea evolved throughout the years into a merger of Bitcoin and the original Ripple technology, resulting in the system Ploy called AmicoPay. Earlier drafts of Amico Pay did not utilize payment channels and therefore injected trust in the system, however. Should one user refuse to settle a balance with another user, the latter would have no recourse. An early payment network proposal that utilized payment channels was proposed by mathematician and future Bitcoin Embassy TLV co-founder Mini Rosenfeld in the summer of 2012. On the Bitcoin Talk forum, Rosenfeld described a system in which Bob, from the above example, is replaced by a payment processor, with both Alice and Carol as its customers. The payment processor could, in turn, also have channels with other payment processors, with more customers, turning the payment channel network into a hub-and-spoke system. While such a system did introduce a little bit of trust in the payment processors, they could refuse to forward a payment and keep the money instead, this risk was considered small. The trick would only work for one payment before a customer would notice and stop using the channel. Additionally, bigger payments could be cut into smaller increments, so that if one payment processor proved to be unreliable, only a small portion of the payment would be lost. This solution resurfaced a couple of times throughout the years. Bitcoin Core contributor Peter Todd, for example, published the concept to the Bitcoin development mailing list in 2014. Payment processor BitPay, meanwhile, published a white paper on similar inter-channel payments, Impulse, in early 2015. And a solution like this would actually be implemented by the Swedish startup StrawPay, called Strum, at around the same time. But none of these iterations ever took off in a meaningful way. A relatively early attempt at establishing a trustless payment channel network was made by Alex Axelrod. First described in a wiki draft in 2013 to be implemented as a proof of concept throughout 2014, Axelrod's solution went a long way toward solving the problem on a theoretical level. The main problem was that it would still be rather clunky in practice. If a payment were to fail anywhere along the route of a transaction, for example, a user would have no recourse but to wait until the funds were freed through the payment channel time locks, which could potentially take months. Meanwhile, by 2015, Ploy's Amico Pay had evolved to the point where it could potentially work trustlessly too. However, his design would have required relatively far-reaching changes to the Bitcoin protocol, to the point where rolling back certain types of transactions would be necessary. While technically possible, it was not obvious whether such changes to the Bitcoin protocol would be adopted. Later that same year, researchers from the Technical University in Zurich, ETH Zurich, Dr. Christian Decker, now at Blockstream, and Roger Wattenhofer proposed yet another overlay network design in their white paper, a fast and scalable payment network with Bitcoin duplex micropayment channels. Their solution relied strongly on time locks as a sort of countdown ticker for payment channel validity, which was combined with a cryptographic trick called an invalidation tree for expired channel balances. Axelrod's solution, the later drafts of Amico Pay and Duplex Micropayment Channels, DMCs, were all similar to the Lightning Network in some ways, and could have worked in their own right by making different trade-offs. If the Lightning Network had not been invented, any of these solutions might have become the basis of Bitcoin's go-to scaling layer instead. But of course, the Lightning Network was invented. The Lightning Network. After years of payment channel and network design evolution, all the pieces of the puzzle finally fell together in early 2015. Thaddeus Taj Dryja, the CTO of smart contract trading platform Mirror, and Joseph Poon wrote a white paper titled "The Bitcoin Lightning Network: Scalable Off-Chain Instant Payments," first published in February of that year. It proved to be a game changer. The Lightning Network white paper, as this publication came to be referred to, proposed several solutions to realize a payment channel network completely trustlessly. no participants could cheat without risking all the money they put up in their channel, while middlemen forwarding transactions would be unable to steal even a tiny bit of it. Additionally, the solution required relatively few changes to the Bitcoin protocol and promised to be more flexible and user-friendly than the alternatives proposed so far. The key innovation described in the white paper are Poondrija channels. Like earlier payment channel designs, Poondrija channels depend on the exchange of partially signed and non-broadcasted transactions. But compared to previous payment channels, these new channels take an additional step involving the exchange of secret numbers, which allow payment channels to be updated in either direction. Alice can pay Bob an arbitrary number of times, and Bob can pay Alice within the same channel an equally arbitrary number of times. Additionally, the Lightning Network leverages hashed time lock contracts, or HTLCs. This concept is usually attributed to Tyr Nolan and was originally designed for cross-blockchain transactions, for example, to exchange Bitcoin and Litecoin trustlessly. In the Lightning Network, this solution is instead used to link payments across payment channels. Poondrija first presented their idea publicly at the San Francisco Bitcoin Dev Seminar in February of 2015. In the months thereafter, during the spring and summer of 2015, Bitcoin's scaling issue and the block size limit dispute turned into a public feud. In the midst of this crisis atmosphere, a series of two conferences was organized for late 2015, Scaling Bitcoin Montreal in September and Scaling Bitcoin Hong Kong in December. In Montreal, Poondrija presented their proposal once again. Then both Poondrija gave a second, more in-depth presentation in Hong Kong as well. Right after the second edition of the conference in Hong Kong, Gregory Maxwell proposed a scaling roadmap on the Bitcoin development mailing list. This roadmap prominently included the Lightning Network. It gained support from the majority of Bitcoin's technical community and became the de facto roadmap for the Bitcoin Core project. If anticipation for the Lightning Network wasn't big enough already, it certainly was now. The implementations. The Lightning Network white paper is a long and complex document covering highly technical concepts. In 2015, few people had the time and skill to read through and understand it. But general understanding increased significantly when longtime Linux kernel developer Rusty Russell learned about the white paper. In a series of blog posts published in early 2015, Russell translated the proposal for a more general but still quite technical audience. Then in May of 2015, Russell was hired by blockchain development company Blockstream to develop an actual implementation of Lightning in the C programming language, C Lightning. This major step toward implementation proved pivotal. A concept that had only been proposed a couple of months prior was now in the process of being realized by a world-class developer. Russell was later joined by Christian Decker at Blockstream, while other developers, including Cornet Ploy, would, over the next couple of years, contribute to the open source project as well. Soon after Russell started working on C Lightning, Blockstream was no longer the only company to realize a Lightning implementation. By the summer of 2015, Async, a smaller Bitcoin technology company that had originally planned to develop smart card-based hardware wallets, decided to try their hand at the promising technology as well. The Paris-based startup would later announce that it had developed its own implementation of the Lightning protocol in the Scala programming language, named Eclair. Another couple of months down the road, a third implementation was in the works. By January 2016, both of the Lightning Network white paper authors, Poondrija, together with Elizabeth Stark and Olalua Asuntokun, founded a whole new company to develop Lightning, Lightning Labs. Lightning Labs would spearhead development on LND, an implementation of Lightning in Google's Go programming language, also known as Golang. About 1 year after founding the company in early 2017, Dreja left Lightning Labs to instead join MIT Media Lab's Digital Currency Initiative, the same organization that employs Bitcoin Core lead developer Vladimir von Delon and several other Bitcoin Core contributors. At MIT, Dreja continued to work on the Lightning implementation he bootstrapped at Lightning Labs, which he renamed LIT. Both LND and LIT exist today. LIT differentiates itself from LND and other implementations by being a wallet and a node wrapped into one. Today, it also supports multiple coins simultaneously through a configuration option. Additionally, blockchain company Bitfury, best known for its mining pool and mining hardware, forked the LND implementation to yet another version of the software. Unique to this fork is that it made trade-offs in the design so as not to require a malleability fix on the Bitcoin network. More on that later. Bitfury also made contributions in the realm of transaction routing, most notably in the form of a protocol called Flare. Development of the Bitfury fork of LND appears to have stalled for now, however. Further, in 2016, major wallet provider Blockchain announced that it developed a simplified version of the Lightning Network called Thunder. This implementation made relatively big trade-offs compared to typical Lightning implementations, most notably because it required trust in counterparties on the network. By making this trade-off, it was able to launch an alpha release of its implementation as early as spring of 2016, long before any other development team. While Thunder might also be made compatible with the Lightning Network in the future, development of this implementation appears to have stalled for now as well. In the days right after scaling Bitcoin Milan, the third edition of the conference organized in late 2016, contributors to most Lightning implementations gathered for what came to be referred to as the first Lightning Summit. Here, they discussed how to make all of the different implementations interoperable, resulting in a Lightning Network protocol specification dubbed BOLT, an acronym for Basis of Lightning Technology. Where the Lightning Network white paper was a theoretical proposal, BOLT became the basis of the actual Lightning Network as we know it today. The protocol changes. When the Lightning Network white paper was first published, the idea described was actually not compatible with the Bitcoin protocol, at least not securely. To enable the Lightning Network as described, Bitcoin required several protocol changes. The first of these were new time locks that would make payment channels resistant to Bitcoin's malleability bug. This problem was already in the process of being solved even before the publication of the Lightning Network white paper, however, and was conclusively solved in 2015, when a new type of time lock designed and proposed by Peter Todd was implemented in the Bitcoin protocol, Check Lock Time Verify, CLTV. Later, Bitcoin Core developers realized that the Lightning Network would function even better with relative time locks. These allow users to lock Bitcoins up for a specific point of time after another transaction has been confirmed. In the context of Lightning, users can keep their payment channels open indefinitely, whereas CLTV time locks require them to close their channels periodically. A soft fork upgrade to realize relative time locks, called Check Sequence Verify, or CSV, was activated on the Bitcoin network by the summer of 2016. But the biggest protocol change that the Lightning network required, at least assuming a decent user experience, was a malleability fix for any Bitcoin transaction. At the time of the publication of the Lightning Network white paper, malleability was considered a big challenge. While a soft fork draft to fix it was in progress at the time, developers weren't sure this could work and thought it might require a hard fork instead. Then, by late 2015, Bitcoin Core contributors realized that Segregated Witness, or SegWit, a malleability fix that was part of Blockstream's Elements project, could be deployed on Bitcoin as a backwards compatible soft fork. After a long struggle, the Segregated Witness soft fork finally activated in the summer of 2017, paving the way for the Lightning Network on Bitcoin as well. For more information on the history of segregated witness, also see The Long Road to SegWit, How Bitcoin's Biggest Protocol Upgrade Became Reality. The Alpha. Even while segregated witness had yet to be deployed on the Bitcoin protocol, and it was not completely certain that it ever would, development of the Lightning Network was well underway. This started on Testnet, the Bitcoin copy specifically designed for testing purposes. Or more accurately in this case, the Lightning Network started on a dedicated version of Testnet, dubbed SegNet 4. It was the fourth SegWit-specific testnet, launched in May of 2016. Less than 6 months after the deployment of SegNet 4 in October of 2016, the Blockstream development team had advanced its C-Lightning prototype to the point where it was usable, in what was referred to as Lightning First Strike. Decker had bought a cat picture from Russell using testnet bitcoins over an early iteration of the Lightning Network. By January of 2017, the first Lightning implementation, LND, was released in alpha. With that, the Lightning Network itself had officially entered into its alpha stage. Developers from around the world were, for the first time, invited to experiment with the technology, while Lightning Labs would continue to help test and improve the code. This alpha phase, in turn, led to a growing number of developers building applications on top of LND and other Lightning implementations. These LAPs, as Lightning implementations have come to be called, range from desktop and mobile wallets, to micropayment blogging platforms, to gambling sites, to explorers, and much more, though in most cases, still designed for Bitcoin's testnet. During the summer of 2017, Segregated Witness finally activated, and the groundwork for the Lightning Network on Bitcoin was completed. From then, it took Blockstream about 3 months to announce its first transaction on Bitcoin's mainnet. A little later in November, Lightning Labs made its first Lightning transaction across blockchains, from Bitcoin to Litecoin. And in December, developer teams from Blockstream, Lightning Labs, and Async announced they had performed successful interoperability tests. Moreover, by the end of the year, others started to actually use the Lightning Network on Bitcoin's mainnet with real money, in some cases even against recommendations of its developers. A growing number of Lightning channels were opened, and by December, developer Alex Bosworth had paid his phone bill through a Lightning channel he'd set up with payment processor BitRefill, one of the first real money purchases over the Lightning Network ever. Another month later, Blockstream, while the C Lightning implementation was still in beta, opened a web shop where real products could be bought with real bitcoins, albeit with a clear warning of the risks involved. And in February of 2018, in an almost poetic closure of Lightning's alpha stage, Bitcoin's legendary Laszlo Hanix of Bitcoin Pizza fame announced that he'd bought pizzas, of course, through the Lightning Network. The Beta. After years of development and even more years of conceptualization, perhaps the biggest milestone of all was reached several weeks ago. Midway through March of 2018, Lightning Labs LND was the first Lightning implementation to be released in beta. Announced simultaneously with a $2.5 million seed investment round, which included big-name investors like Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, Lightning Labs deemed the Lightning implementation it had been spearheading ready for use on Bitcoin's mainnet, though primarily for technical users. This announcement was followed by a tweet from Async on March 28th, announcing that Eclair had also been released in beta and was thus deemed ready for mainnet use as well. The startup added that their Android Lightning wallet would be released the following week. At the time of publication of this article, that is this week. Blockstream's C Lightning implementation has not yet been released in beta, though its development team indicated to Bitcoin Magazine that this may follow shortly too. Adding to a still growing list, the blockchain development company did, however, introduce 7 brand new LAPs in the last week of March, highlighting the company's progress on the Lightning front. While people were already using Lightning software even in alpha, the beta phase has only further stimulated this growth. At the time of publication of this article, well over 1,000 Lightning nodes have opened up almost 5,000 payment channels, holding over 10 Bitcoin, some $70,000 at the time of writing, in aggregate. Hundreds of new nodes are coming online every day, and even a Litecoin-specific Lightning network is taking shape, which could, in the future, be made interoperable with Bitcoins. Yet even with all this progress, it's still early days for the Lightning network. Most users of this network today are still very technical, often developers, and use cases are mostly experimental. While the beta software releases are major milestones, development and improvement of the network is an ongoing process, and much still needs to be done, while open questions on routing, privacy, and other risks remain. Most likely, only further adoption will answer them. Author's note. While doing research for this article, I came to realize that the full prehistory of the Lightning Network is even more extensive than I already knew it was. Outlining it into a single piece required cutting corners and leaving out details, which does not do justice to all the people, projects, and concepts that helped realize this technology. This article is an attempt at outlining the story so far, but it is best understood as a rough summary, not an exhaustive historic or technical account. Thanks to everyone who provided information and other input. All right, and that will do it for our article from Bitcoin Magazine by Aaron Von Wertheim. And again, that was titled The History of Lightning from Brainstorm to Beta. I thought this was an excellent breakdown of the history. It does fail to mention a handful of names that are really important in Lightning develop. I don't think Roast Beef was ever in that, and he is doing a lot of great work with Lightning. So I'll try to tag everybody I can think of. But this really does a wonderful job of breaking down the entire history and the sheer number of people and different teams who have brought this thing from essentially a single directional, a unidirectional, temporary payment channel between just two parties, and extended this concept through so many different iterations and projects into bidirectional indefinite payment channels that are trustless and can be bridged into an entire network. It's just so fascinating to see all of the little pieces come together. And if you are more technical and you kind of like particularly challenging yourself to read something that's really deep and you're probably only going to get about 30% of it, do read the Lightning Network white paper. I've read it like 2.5 times now, and I'm still picking up stuff every time. I'm trying to piece all the things together, and it's awesome. The concepts in it are incredibly dense. So if you think it's a little bit too hard, I would recommend Rusty Russell's translation, so to speak. That's linked to in this article somewhere. I don't remember where, but I'll find that and try to put that in the post as well. His breakdown, as I actually did start with Rusty Russell's translation of it before actually breaking into the Lightning Network white paper. But it's wonderful stuff, and for all the FUD and nonsense that you get about this, this is a massive innovation. And honestly, from everything I've read, this is like one of the only really interesting innovations of smart contracts. Like the ability to bridge, because that's what a payment channel is essentially, and what all these little pieces have created is a smart contract. And I know that's just a kind of a nonsense buzzword, but it's able to bridge contracts into a network, and that's just, God, it's just a fascinating. I absolutely f-ing love this stuff. But with that, I don't want to drag this one out any further. This will close today's Crypto Economy Quick Read. Don't forget to check out BitcoinMagazine.com and follow Aaron Von Wertheim, as well as all the awesome people doing the Lightning Network. development, Joseph Poon, Dryja, Elizabeth Stark, just everybody. I'll be sure to tag them all, or try to tag everybody. It's a long list. Don't forget to follow me at The Crypto Economy on Medium and, of course, Twitter. And subscribe and comment, rate, do all that great stuff for the podcast on iTunes. Please share this with your friends or people you know if you think they'll get something out of this. I'm hoping to expose more people to Bitcoin content because I know audio for a lot of people, definitely myself included, is just easier to consume in bulk than it is to sit down and read stuff. So that's what I'm hoping to do. Thanks, everybody, for listening and sharing, and I will catch you guys next time on the Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy, everybody. We'll be right back.